I do this for my culture. Right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening tonight. Folks, we have a great show lined up for you. We are going to be checking in with Dean Dwayne Wickham, who is a veteran journalist and the founding dean here at the School of Global Journalism and Communications here at Morgan State University. We're going to talk to the dean about all that we're seeing and understanding in regards to what has been happening over these past few days. Also, we got to have a conversation about the denial of destruction. Yes, President Trump has finally gave some remarks today. And this is the big conversation. He finally gave some remarks today about what he saw and what has been happening over the past few days since that infamous day of January the 6th. And then later, we check in with the We Are Us movement as they talk to us about their MLK Day peace rally. So we got a lot to talk to check in with as we have these conversations. Folks, I'm going to encourage you to open up to invite your family and friends to tune in. And if you haven't had a chance, make sure you check us out on our website at WEAA.org, where you can listen live right now. Folks, I'm so excited because I wanted to start this discussion off with a voice who has been around the circuit. He has been reporting on issues of Washington for many, many years. He has an established columnist for USA Today and many other papers, both black and white-owned newspapers. And he is a plethora of history. He's like a walking encyclopedia, especially when it comes to issues of policy, politics, and everything, all that it relates to. And so we are happy to have him on the air joining us this evening. He serves as the founding dean here at the illustrious School of Global Journalism and Communication. I'm happy to have him joining me back here on the airwaves of WEAA, Dean Dwayne Wickham. Good evening, Dean. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm as well as could be expected, given the situation we find ourselves in. So good evening to you, Faraji.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dean, you know what? I had to reach out to you. We've had conversations offline about many different things, but you know, when the idea came to my mind, I said, wait a minute, we've kind of checked in with a lot of different people, but let me check in with the dean himself. And Mallory, our station manager, said, hey, he knows he's been doing this for a very long time. And so I thought that this would be an appropriate moment to get your insight and to share your analysis with the listeners. But Dean, have you, first and foremost, when you saw the images, what was going through your mind about what was happening as the events were unfolding on January the 6th?
Well, I had a couple of reactions, Roger. First of all, I started my journalism career as a Capitol Hill correspondent for U.S. News and World Report. I covered the Capitol. I worked in the press gallery inside the Capitol. I know those halls. I know those halls not only from my time as a journalist there, but I know those halls because when I ventured off to work on my final degree at the University of Maryland, Perrin Mitchell, the first elected congressman from Maryland, first black elected congressman from Maryland, gave me a job working part-time for him and the Capitol. And so a lot of memories I have from those days and a lot of concerns I have about the people who work there. Listen, we can talk about this from the micro perspective
right.
or the macro perspective.
Gotcha,
if
sir.
We talk about this from the micro perspective, we're talking about what happened, the immediate reaction to what happened, what took place there. You know, already the president and his supporters are saying it's Antifa. They did it. It was some left-wing rabble that infiltrated their group and took over and led them into the Capitol and did all kinds of horrible things. That's what they are saying. I don't know if you remember the days of Warner Wolf. Warner Wolf used to be a sports broadcaster, I think, on Channel 9 in Washington. And he would always say, and he would talk about the event, and then he'd say, let's go to the videotape. Well, let's go to the videotape. Because that's what's going to tell us who was behind this, and to the extent that there was some organized activity, we're going to discover that just by looking at the videotapes. And we're getting a lot of help from social media, because these folks weren't the brightest lights in the chandelier.
Right.
They went in documenting their criminality. They didn't document, thank God, when they defecated on the floor and tracked their poop throughout the halls. You heard about that.
Yes, sir, absolutely, I did.
I don't mean to offend our listeners, but I want to talk about how crass these people are. So we can talk about that. We can talk about the brutality that was involved in the beating of Capitol Hill police. We can talk about the heroics of the African American officer who's seen on video leading a would-be mob, not a would-be mob, but a group of people who would be maybe the oppressors of members of the Congress. They were heading in that direction toward the Senate floor. He led them away from the Senate floor, and hopefully we will get those people under lock and key soon. We can talk about him, but, you know, we haven't mentioned his name yet, and I think a part of that is because he's concerned about his own security. But when the time is right, we need to recognize him, because in some ways, he might be the Frank Wills of this moment. You don't remember Frank Wills? Frank Wills was the black security guard in Watergate, in the Watergate building, who discovered the break-in. He was the hero of that moment. He discovered the break-in. He's the one who called the cops.
Right.
Who responded. And then all that followed that, resulting in the resignation, the forced resignation of Richard Nixon, Frank Wills was the person who started all of that, and history has largely forgotten him. And the hero that we see, at least visually, from all the videotape, of the moment that occurred was this officer who led these people away from the senators and actually into the clutches of a group of cops who were coming from another direction. So hopefully we won't forget the heroics. I'm sure there were a lot of heroics, but we don't want to forget the heroics of this black officer as well.
And Ian, I'm so happy that you said that, because it could have gotten into a much more, it could have got a lot worse. The situation could have got worse had that group that he had diverted away from the Senate floor had found their way through the halls of the Capitol. I wanted to ask you in particular, because you are a man about language, and there has been so much, so many different terms to describe what has happened, from everything from insurrection to attack to coup. What's the best word to describe what we saw on January the 6th, sir? Was it an insurrection? Was it a failed coup? What would you say?
I would say both. It was an insurrection that attempted to bring about a coup that failed. They went there at the urgings of the President of the United States and at the urgings of his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who hopefully will soon be arrested as well for inciting this awful event. They went there for the purpose of stopping the legitimate exercise of the United States Congress in affirming the victory of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
And that was the thing about it, Dean. It was like you told your supporters and your followers to go there to do what? Because that wasn't a public hearing. that was something that could have been watched on television. It was televised on television. But you told them to do what? To intimidate and muscle your way into taking votes? Because that was the part that I didn't understand. Like, what were they planning to do?
He wanted them to stop the confirmation of the victory. He wanted them
physically
to
stop
the process. Well, he didn't say physically, but
he wanted them
to stop, and certainly that would be implied, and the
right.
jury hopefully will get an opportunity to make that determination. But he wanted to prevent them from certifying the election. Now, how they might do that, other than to physically stop them from doing their job, I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's what they were called upon to do. And then if you listen to the language. Giuliani talking about war.
He said trial by combat.
And listen, how ironic is this? I mean, here we have two men who, it's kind to call them chicken hawks. These are men who never served the country in uniform, but they use the language of combatants. And the president, I hope, we keep reinforcing the fact, because some of these people are such dupes that they need to have their kind of, like dogs, when you train the dog, you rub their face in it. You need to keep repeating for these people who follow this president that he not only told them to go to the Hill, he told them he was going with them.
And guess where he went, Dean?
He got into that heavily armored car there and drove back up to the White House, closed the gate, and went inside.
And wait, and watched the news.
And watched it on TV. So I guess we can say, for his purposes, the revolution actually was televised.
So the president came out today with some remarks. And we wanted to, this is going to be a part of the big conversation that we're going to have. But since we brought it up, I want to bring it to your attention, saying that his remarks were totally appropriate. He said that he didn't, you know, the whole basis of the impeachment is the incitement of an insurrection. But he said it was totally appropriate. So First, I want to get your take on this impeachment, because you worked in. And covering this part of the political scene, this impeachment would actually, they're trying to get where he doesn't hold public office in any time for, you know, no point after this point.
Yeah.
Which is something different that we've normally seen with impeachments before. Is that what I'm understanding, sir?
Well, that's what they're attempting to do, but it's a stretch. I mean, let's be honest about this. It's a stretch. Will the House vote to impeach him? Yes. But under the impeachment rules, the House is only required to have a majority vote to impeach.
Right.
Impeaching is to indict. It's to charge. It's not to convict. The trial takes place after one is impeached, and then the Senate, sitting as the jurors, must by a two-thirds vote convict. Those votes aren't there in the Senate.
Right.
They aren't there. But the argument is this. If he committed an egregious crime, an egregious offense against the nation that he is sworn to protect, should he be allowed to go unpunished?
Right.
At least to the extent should he be allowed to not be charged with the crime? You know, you can't get anything before a jury until you get it past a prosecutor.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, when in the Black Lives Movement, we learned this, that you got to get prosecutors to charge. Don't worry about what's going to happen at the trial first, because you can't get there until you get the charges leveled against someone. And so the House is saying, we're going to charge this guy. And then we're going to let history and public opinion push these senators to make the right decision.
And when we talked to Congressman Kwesi Mfume the other night, Dean, he was mentioning, because I asked him, I said, well, Mr. Congressman, even if we go through the impeachment, there's only a few days left before he's out of office. And he made a point that I think that makes it is a valid, valid point. He said, if we at least don't impeach, we're showing this country and the rest of the world that there aren't consequences for this great action.
Yeah. Well, absolutely right. But here's the other point. Simply because the Congress changes hands doesn't mean that the impeachment is called off. There still must be a trial. And so if the Senate under Republican control does not take up the impeachment, or more importantly, if the House doesn't send the articles of impeachment to the Senate before Joe Biden becomes president, they can send it to the Senate after Joe Biden becomes president and after the Democrats have majority control.
Mm.
That still doesn't get us to two-thirds, but it gets us to the point where we can be certain to have a full-blown trial.
Even after he leaves office, he can still be brought up on those charges.
Absolutely. So what happens is that the new Congress that takes their seat later this month, legislation enacted in this Congress dies at the end of this Congress.
Right.
But that's a parliamentary rule that has to do with how they take care of their business. It has nothing to do with impeachment.
Mm.
So the House impeaches, and then at some point the House will send its article of impeachment over to the Senate. And it's at that time, whether it happens before the Republicans lose control of the Senate or after the Republicans lose control of the Senate and Democrats take over control of the Senate, they then begin the process of having a trial.
Dean, talk to us a little bit.
They can hold it 90 days, 120 days.
I'm so happy that you broke this thing down for us, because, I mean, there's been a lot of chatter about what this process looks like and how it would go forward. But I appreciate the fact that you broke that down. But folks that have also talked about, and I'm sure you heard it, have talked about this double standard in the treatment of these white rioters versus Black Lives Matter protesters. How can we leverage this double standard to bring about some systemic change, either in policing or protecting those who have a real grievance and want to take their grievance to the streets? Is there any way we can leverage that from this moment?
I talked about approaching this from the micro and the macro.
Yes,
you talked about the micro, the immediate situation. Here's my take on the macro. The macro has to do a lot with holding off what might occur, what should logically occur, when Black and brown and Asian people become a majority of the population. You see, so what is motivating all of this is not just the election of Joe Biden. It is the movement toward a nation that will be majority-minority. So if you look at the two forces that are arrayed here, you have one set that reflects as best it can at this point the nature of our nation. It's a force made up of Blacks and Latina and Asians and whites. And if you look at the other side, it is largely virtually all white.
Mm-hmm.
It is the rear guard of Jim Crow. But it is also a force that is determined to put off the day when Blacks and Asians and Latina will be a majority of the population in a meaningful way. How does this work? Well, part of it is the anti-immigration movement, building the wall. The president's only built, he's only tried to build one wall. He tried to build a wall, didn't do very well at it. Along the southern border,
mm-hmm.
to stop people who are Latinas from coming into the country. The largest border that we share with another country is our northern border with Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't put a brick in the ground there because he's not concerned about people who are not Latinas coming into the country.
Mm-hmm.
A part of it is you slow down the growth of the Latina population. The other part of it is that you oppress the ability of people who are already here and who are not white to vote. So you've got this whole movement to limit and to oppress the voting rights of blacks and Hispanics, to stop the movement of Hispanics into the country. This is all, and you see it in rules that make people who have felony convictions unable to vote, because we know what happens in the criminal justice process. Most people who are arrested for crimes in America are white. Most people who are convicted for crimes in America are black and Latino. I mean, I'm not making this up.
Right.
We see this every year in the FBI data that's published. Okay, it's factual. And so they have a long-term plan to restrict the ability of a majority of people who are not white. That majority comes about, demographers say, maybe around 2050, a little thereafter. This will be a majority-minority nation. They want to bring about what I call the American apartheid. That's the long range picture. So, part of it is manifested in how we're treated by policing, but that's not the big problem in the long term. I know people say, hey, it's a big problem right now, but the real problem that we need to have a strategy to avert is the attempt on the part of those who look long range to stop us from becoming the political majority in this country, to stop us from having the kind of voting power to affect economic decisions in this nation.
Dean, we got a few moments left, and I'm so happy that you gave us some insight tonight. You know, my last big question for you, sir, is what should we learn from this?
Hey, you know this. You've heard this before. Frederick Douglass said that power conceives nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. We won in Georgia because Stacey Abrams made a demand, and she convinced people that, yes, we can do this, and we turned out in record numbers, and we're going to forestall the American apartheid. We can't do it in 2049. We can't do it in 2050. We have to do it in 2021. And so we have to energize our forces. We have to take to the bunkers, not literally, but figuratively speaking, mm-hmm. take to the political bunkers, and we have to exercise every right that we have to vote and challenge those who would challenge us, challenge them at the polls. And we can win there. We should win in Texas in the next election, in 2022. We should win there. If we win Texas, it's all over for the Republicans for a generation.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree.
Texas right now is a majority-minority state. Blacks and Latinas in Texas are a majority of the population. So we have some real targets, and Stacey Abrams has shown us the way. And I think we need to be aggressive in pursuing the path that she's laid out for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. And I know as things continue to unfold, we would certainly like to bring you back on to get more analysis from you.
I look forward to it. Let's get this done. Let's win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dean Dwayne Wickham, veteran journalist and the founding dean of the School of Global Journalism and Communications here at Morgan State University. Dean, thank you so much, sir, for being so good for the culture.
Always good to be with you, Faraji.
Thank you. Folks, we got to take a quick pause. When we come back, let's get to that big conversation. Let's talk about the denial of destruction. The president came out in his remarks to say that he wasn't out of line, that it was all totally appropriate what he had to say. We'll share that information with you. So stay riding with me. We got a lot to get to. And, of course, we'll be opening up the phone lines for you to share your thoughts. It's For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.